It's up!
Welcome to the Young Turks, Cenk Uygur, Anna Kasparian with you guys. Big news day ahead, of course. Breaking news on abortion. You're gonna be shocked to find out there's a little bit on Gaza and a lot on Donald Trump. He's apparently a very compassionate guy. Who is he compassionate to? We'll find out later in the program. Jared Kushner, some sketchy deals we're gonna tell you about. But already, Cheryl Moen, Jay, and JT have joined us by hitting the join button below the video on YouTube. You can do likewise either by doing that or tyt.com/team. And if you're thinking it says join, but that can't also mean upgrade, you're wrong. It can, because Gina Jones just upgraded TYT producer. So yes, you guys produce the show along with us, because without, there's guys who are money bags and they are executive producers of other things, like the fracking brothers that run the that invested in the Daily Wire. But you guys are our money bags, $5 at a time. So thank you guys, we appreciate you. Anna.
Well, we begin with an update out of the state of Arizona, something that Carrie Lake was supportive of, but now suddenly is condemning. Let's get to it.
Hello, Arizona. It's Governor Katie Hobbs. Like millions of women across Arizona, I am reeling from the Supreme Court's callous decision to uphold the 1864 total abortion ban. This archaic law, which was written by men 48 years before Arizona even became a state, threatens the lives of countless women and strips us of control over our bodies.
Now, Carrie Lake is the Republican candidate who actually ran against Katie Hobbs, and she's also condemning what the state Supreme Court has decided in regard to reproductive rights in the state of Arizona today. We'll get to Carrie Lake in just a moment, and you don't want to miss that portion of the story because it is fascinating and shows you exactly how politics works. But first, let's talk about what the state's Supreme Court has decided to do. Now, in a 4-3 decision, or the 4-3 decision, I should say, it supersedes the previous rule, which guarded the right to end a pregnancy by the 15th week mark in the state of Arizona, resetting policy to the pre-Roe v. Wade era and adding Arizona to the roster of 16 other states where abortion is virtually outlawed. Now, Arizona was one of a handful of states that never formally repealed abortion bans after the passage of Roe v. Wade, or after the Supreme Court decision of Roe v. Wade in 1973. And so when the Supreme Court reversed Roe v. Wade through the Dobbs decision in 2022, basically what that allowed for was the revival of that old anti-abortion law, that abortion ban, to come into effect. Now, the court said that the 19th century measure needed to be harmonized, though, with the more recent law, which banned abortion after 15 weeks. So under the 1864 territorial law, which went into effect 48 years before Arizona became a state, anyone who administers an abortion could face a mandatory prison sentence of 2 to 5 years. That ban could compel Arizona's licensed abortion clinics to ramp down dramatically or shutter, though it's unclear how the decision will be enforced. And the law was also passed decades before women even had the right to vote in the United States. And to be clear, much of the conversation about reproductive rights in modern times here in the United States is dominated by male politicians. So I think it's important to be clear about that. Now, the only exception to this old law that has now been revived is to save the mother's life. But we've seen how that plays out in other states that have effectively banned abortion. And so would the mother need to go before the court and prove that her life is in jeopardy due to the pregnancy? What if time is of the essence? These issues are incredibly unclear. And remember, we're really talking about reproductive health. It's not just about abortion. And now you have government officials involved in one of the most intimate and difficult decisions that women have to make about their own bodies and about whether or not they carry a pregnancy to term. So Katie Hobbs also said they can do this right now, they can do it today, meaning change the laws, pass a new law in the state of Arizona that supersedes this old law. They should listen to their constituents, 9 out of 10 Arizonans who support access to abortion, and do the right thing so that we are not living under the confusion and chaos and lack of access to healthcare that's needed. So the ruling cannot be enforced for 14 days, the judges wrote, during which Planned Parenthood, as a party to the court case, could raise constitutionality questions before the lower court. A referendum to constitutionality, or I should say, to constitutionally protect abortion access in Arizona, has enough petition signatures to appear on the ballot in November. So this issue ultimately will be decided by the people of Arizona. The question now is how healthcare in the state will be affected and how many women may suffer between now and November as a result of this ruling. So before we get to Carrie Lake's statements, Cenk, what are your thoughts?
So this has three different components and they play out in different ways. Number one is a court decision. Look, I'm not angry about the court decision. There's a law in the books, Roe v. Wade gets rid of what they have today, so they go back to the old law. So that sucks, but I get it. And you can make a counter argument legally, and they did, and it was a close case. But I'm not outraged by the court decision at all, to be honest with you. On the other hand, policy wise, total disaster. So I know like everything is binary in politics. So if you are in favor of abortion rights, you have to hate the courts, whether it makes sense or not, right? But we love the courts when they were protecting Roe v. Wade. So let's be honest, okay? So the court decision is not the issue here. The policy is the issue. So now the Hobbs is exactly right. Now Arizona, you're gonna get to make a decision. Which way do you wanna go? That this is what politics is all about. If it's about like Hunter Biden hearings and who wins and who's got the biggest ego, I don't care. Nobody cares, right? But it actually does affect your lives. And so in Arizona, you'll either have reproductive rights for women or you won't. And so that's the ballot initiative that's gonna come up in November. By the way, you might not need that ballot initiative if Republicans go, oh no, you guys are right. We'll actually go with democracy. And obviously the huge majority in Arizona wants abortion rights, so we'll go for abortion rights. But they won't, they'll say, shut up, okay? Our religion and our interpretation of the religion will rule your lives. Okay, then don't vote for them. It's that simple. So that's what politics is all about. Get on the right side of an issue and you'll win. If you're not, you lose. That's sad day for you. That's literally what we want out of a system, right? Okay, so then that leads to the politics. Our member on Twitch is exactly right. I think Jules2U writes in, methinks Arizona is about to go blue. That's right. The biggest winner out of this decision today is Joe Biden. Arizona is a critical swing state. Mm-hmm. And so what the Arizona Supreme Court just did was tie a beautiful bow on top of a giant gift. This is in politics, not in policy. In policy, women have to suffer between now and November, and we're lucky if that's all, okay? But in politics, this is gonna drive out all of extra voters. It's gonna create so much more voter enthusiasm, not just from women, but all of these voters that are on the Democratic side, but not just on the Democratic side. A lot of independents,
yes,
and unexpected voters are showing up to vote for reproductive rights. So it couldn't be worse news for Trump. It couldn't be better news for Joe Biden. But for now, it's still terrible news for women in Arizona.
It's important to make those distinctions that you just made, Cenk, between the politics and the policy. So if you're a Democrat and you've been concerned about how poorly Joe Biden has been performing in swing states, this type of move by the Arizona Supreme Court is again a giant gift to Biden. You're right. But the policy is absolutely awful, because between now and November, if a woman's life is in jeopardy due to the pregnancy, how exactly is this gonna play out, like I said earlier? And more importantly, what happens if a woman does not have the resources to travel out of state in order to get the reproductive care that she needs? So this is an awful policy, and the political liability associated with this policy for the Republican Party is so brutal that Carrie Lake went from supporting the revival of this law to now suddenly backing off and condemning it. So here's what she said after the Supreme Court made its decision. In addition to covering the state of Arizona as a fair and honest journalist for 27 years, I have traveled to every corner of this state on the campaign trail. I speak to more Arizonans than anyone, and it is abundantly clear that the pre-statehood law is out of step with Arizonans. She continues to say, I am the only woman and mother in this race. I understand the fear, anxiety, and joy of pregnancy and motherhood. I wholeheartedly agree with President Trump. This is a very personal issue that should be determined by each individual state and her people. By the way, a personal issue means it's personal to the individual whose life the pregnancy is impacting, okay? Not personal to the entire state. The idea that the entire state should have a say in the personal and intimate matter of an individual woman, I think is insane. But nonetheless, let me continue. She also says that it should be determined by each individual state and her people. I oppose today's ruling and am calling on Katie Hobbs and the state legislature to come up with an immediate common sense solution that Arizonans can support. Now, if you take that statement in a vacuum, perfectly fine statement. I like that statement. It's a good statement, but you can't look at it in a vacuum. You have to look at it in the context of Carrie Lake taking an incredibly important issue, intimate decision that families make, women make, and politicizing it for her own advantage. Once she sees that it's a disadvantage, she backs off. So what do I mean by that? I want to go to this video, because apparently Lake had released a statement earlier saying that she supported the 1864 law. So this is what she said during a 2022 gubernatorial debate.
Carrie, we'll start with you on this one. The new law banning abortion, well, the new law banning abortion in Arizona after 15 weeks. There's that law, and there's a territorial era law which bans all abortion, zippo, over. Mm-hmm. Which law do you think should take effect?
My personal belief is that all life matters, all life counts, and all life is precious, and I don't believe in abortion. I think the older law is going to take is going to go into effect. That's what I believe will happen.
Okay, but you approve of that? What, at conception?
I believe life begins at conception.
Okay, what do we do about abortion pills? What do we do about
I don't think abortion pills should be legal. That's a very
not in Arizona.
That wasn't the first time she supported that super old 1864 abortion ban. Let's go to the other time that she did so, again in 2022.
I'm incredibly thrilled that we are going to have a great law that's already on the books. So it will prohibit abortion in Arizona. And I think we're going to be paving the way and setting course for other states to follow.
Very clear. So for people like Carrie Lake, and she's not the only one, to be fair, this is simply a political issue. Use it as a tool, maneuver when necessary, and change your message when necessary. But at the end of the day, you're playing with people's lives. Okay, to politicize this and use it as a political weapon or tool is absolutely disgusting and disgraceful.
Yeah. So there's a difference between the real populace on the left and the fake populace on the right. Sorry, but it's true. So Bernie Sanders, you're not gonna catch him in a lie like this, and he's not gonna flip-flop his positions. You could disagree with his positions, and I could disagree with his strategy, and I have. But he's not gonna be like, oh, I like the 1864 law. I hate the 1864 law, based on how the polling goes, because he actually cares about things. But grifters and liars like Carrie Lake, Donald Trump, etc., and by the way, all the corporate Republicans and all the corporate Democrats, will come out and talk out of both sides of their mouth. There's a classic example. Where's the populist part? Populist is supposed to mean someone who's straightforward and with the average person, right? Does she look like she's straightforward? I love the 1864 law. How's it polling? Okay, we're pretending to be on that side. Oh, the polling's really bad and I want to win and I want power, 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 status, title, wealth for myself. Oh, the polling is bad? Oh, I don't like the 1864 law. Let's put out a press release saying I don't like it. Oh, when did you develop that new opinion? Get out of here, man. She's such an obvious fraud. Look, that's obvious to everyone but the Republicans. So Republicans, you tell me, which Carrie Lake is the one I should trust? The one that says she wants the 1864 law or the one now pretending to be against the 1864 law? I don't know, maybe she was pretending before. Maybe she's had 18 abortions, doesn't care at all, and she's been grifting you guys the whole time. I have no idea what Carrie Lake actually thinks. I know which way she's grifting from time to time. So if you're a Democrat or independent in Arizona and you think Carrie Lake's gonna protect your abortion rights, come on, please don't tell me anyone's that gullible, okay? So no, you have a super clear choice in Arizona. And this is not an international issue. This is not, hey, I don't like the Ukraine policy, Israel policy. No, this is Arizona. And so the decision is, are you gonna go with Republicans like Carrie Lake, but all of them, that say, yeah, we're gonna take your rights away, or Democrats in this rare case that actually fight for your rights and say, yes, you're gonna get to do what you want with your body, because unlike the Republicans, we believe in freedom.
Well, we have some updates on Gaza. I actually wanna take a break before we get to those segments because, well, CNN did another investigation, this time into the notorious Flower Massacre. And wow, wouldn't you know it, what a surprise. They found inconsistencies in the investigation and statements that were released by the IDF. And they checked those statements using video evidence of what happened on the ground. So you don't wanna miss that. We've got that story and more coming up. We'll be right back.
Back on TYT, Cenk, Anna, JC King 76, and BC Marty 1. They became members by going through tyt.com/team. You could either become a member there, we're trying to get to 100,000 members, or donate, we're trying to get to $1 million as a bridge to be able to get to 2025 and survive the perfect storm that the media industry is in. Also, Jonathan Samuels joined up on YouTube, and Diana Genovese also joined up, and we appreciate Diana that you came in at the premium level. And then OneLove83 gifted a membership, and Sid and Kat Linens gifted 5 on YouTube. You guys are amazing. And for all the people that are either doing a super chat or donating for Anna's 17th anniversary on TYT, we appreciate you guys and we appreciate her. So without further ado, Anna.
Well, let's talk a little bit about a CNN investigation on the notorious Flower Massacre that took place in Gaza. This took place in February of this year, and it was an awful, awful story that we covered. But now we have a little more clarity on what happened on the ground. So without further ado, let's talk about it.
Thousands of starving people have gathered here to receive food. But as the aid trucks arrive, this happens. The night would become known as the Flower Massacre. By morning, over 100 would be dead in one of the single biggest mass casualty events of this conflict. The UN has documented 24 attacks on Palestinians awaiting aid in the last 3 months alone.
Of course. CNN investigated the notorious Flower Massacre in Gaza, where 118 Palestinians were killed after Israeli Defense Forces opened fire on them as they were gathered around a humanitarian aid convoy in the hopes of getting some food, some sustenance. This was the first humanitarian aid convoy that managed to get to the northern part of the Gaza Strip, where hundreds of thousands of Palestinians remain and they are dying of starvation. Now, to be sure, Israelis and Palestinians have conflicting accounts of what happened that day. This was during the early morning hours of February 29th. So Gazan health authorities said that scores of people had been killed in the gunfire and those injured were treated at hospitals for gunshot wounds. While the Israeli military said most people had been trampled to death in a stampede for the food aid or struck by the aid trucks driving away from the melee. Now, let's talk a little bit about the investigation before we go to some clips showing you what actually occurred. So CNN gathered some never before seen footage of what was happening on the ground. And they did so by talking to 22 eyewitnesses. So these were people on the ground as the flower massacre was taking place. Their investigation also traced the aid to a Muslim charity in the United Kingdom known as Ummah Welfare Trust, and reporters spoke to the head of that organization as part of their investigation as well. Now, CNN's report found inconsistencies in the IDF's version of events. So let's walk through that. First, the IDF alleged that they fired warning shots at the Palestinians because they were creating a stampede and endangering the IDF soldiers, who, by the way, were obviously armed in tanks. But that's actually not the case. We'll get to why. For instance, Mark Regev, the Israeli Prime Minister's special advisor, initially told CNN that Israeli forces had not been involved. Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari, the Israel Defense Forces spokesperson, said soon after the soldiers had not fired directly on Palestinians seeking aid, but rather fired warning shots in the air. Now, the investigation done by CNN shows that this is actually not true. Let's watch.
It was the IDF that was then responsible for safely delivering these vital supplies. But we found they opened fire on unarmed, starving Palestinians at close range as the aid arrived. Their explanation for the tragedy using this drone video was a stampede that caused soldiers to fire warning shots in the air. They later admitted to firing some shots directly at so-called suspects who approached them. But the IDF footage is incomplete. It cuts between crowds surrounding the trucks and bodies lying on the ground. Even this reveals they were firing in a densely packed area, likely to cause severe bloodshed. CNN requested the full footage from the IDF, but it was denied.
Wonder why the IDF denied footage that CNN had requested so they can have a more complete picture of what happened, what transpired that day.
Yeah, look, is IDF lying every time they put out a statement? Probably not, but it certainly does seem that way these days. So, but we're gonna back it up with evidence. So first of all, great job by CNN in showing that in this case, IDF was definitely lying. And they massacred those poor people. But to me, the most relevant fact is that it wasn't the only time that they did it, 24 times.
26 times to be specific.
Right, so people come for food. And in this case, eyewitnesses report them, the Israelis shooting at them as they're approaching to get the flour, for bread, etc. And then in other instances, witnesses say they get a flour or whatever other aid that they're picking up. They're walking away and the IDF shoots them in the back. So you're telling me that 26 times they accidentally shot people getting food? Okay, I mean, there's still some people who are such zealots that they'll believe absurdities like that. So why are they seem to be shooting on purpose to murder people who are coming to get food, who are starving and their family's starving? That's why sometimes they'll even walk in. And a lot of the witnesses say, oh, I knew they were shooting, but I had to get the flour because either my family was gonna die of starvation or I was gonna die trying to get the flour. So I went and tried to get the flour anyway. And some guys get shot in the leg and they keep going, etc. Right? So why are they doing this? Well, that one's hard to know. There is no documentation on it, but it appears that they're trying to starve them into a state of absolute desperation. Now, what do they do after that? Well, I'm afraid we're gonna find out. But you don't shoot at aid workers like World Central Kitchen on purpose.
Drone strikes.
Murder them all. You don't hit aid convoys, innocent civilians trying to get food 26 times by accident. You do that if you're trying to make sure no one gets aid in there. And right now, guys, it's not theoretical. They're starving to death right now as we speak. And Israel keeps blocking aid coming in. They let in a tiny dribble. The part that really gets me every time is that they keep insulting the Western powers that give them billions of dollars, including America and the UK. And they say, we don't trust you. We're gonna have to check your materials because who knows, maybe you're gonna help the Hamas. So we're gonna hold you up, but that's of course not what it is. They wanna delay the aid as long as humanly possible to starve more Palestinians.
Well, look, I actually do not have a problem with the IDF wanting to, you know, do searches of the humanitarian aid. You know, they're concerned that someone might be trying to smuggle in weapons. Fine, even if you don't trust your ally that's helping you fund this war, that's fine. But the problem is, it's not really about doing searches of the humanitarian aid trucks. It's about the weird, arbitrary denials of the trucks entering the Gaza Strip without any explanation, even when there's no indication that there's anything questionable or suspect within the humanitarian aid trucks. Look, that's the problem.
We know what Ben-Gvir and Smotrich's intentions are, because they've stated them. They say we want to drive out the Palestinians, absolutely pulverize them, and then drive them into the desert and then take Gaza. Okay, so right now, I don't know if that's also Netanyahu and the entire government's plan, but it certainly looks like that's what they're executing. So that is why they're blocking aid and creating this situation. Guys, CNN's report said they were firing 600 rounds a minute. You're so worried about your safety inside of a tank that you're firing 600 rounds a minute at unarmed civilians. Please. Okay, and anyone who thinks that Israel isn't killing civilians on purpose has totally lost touch with reality. They're out in la la land. And so I know that's 85% of Washington, but you guys sound like lunatics to the rest of us. And so how can you tell who's lying? First of all, saying I'm proved. The second of all, did you hear what they said? They say to Israel, show us the moment when the firing started, because you guys say you guys were worried about your safety and they rushed you and that's why you started firing. And Israel goes, no, they edited out that section of the drone footage.
Right.
Okay, so you're obviously lying. Obviously, only a person so blinded by bias would notice that they lied about this, they lied about UNRWA, they lied about not killing civilians on purpose. Then we find out where's daddy program, where they wait for the so-called suspected militant to arrive at home so they could murder his children and his family with him.
We're gonna keep funding it. Lloyd Austin today said that he doesn't believe that what's being carried out is a genocide. He disagrees with members of the international community who have labeled this as a genocide. And we still get this, you know, defiant treatment from the likes of John Kirby, who seems like almost unapologetic about what's happening, right? That there's something about how Kirby carries himself and how he answers questions during his presser that really gets under my skin, because there seems to be this open disregard for innocent human lives. As long as those human lives are on one side of this unbearable, terrible war. And I can't get over the fact that we're represented by a government that openly on the international stage greenlights what's happening to the Palestinian people in Gaza right now. Now, let's get to the second half of this investigation, because they found other inconsistencies with the IDF, specifically the IDF's investigation into what happened. Following that investigation, they put out this timeline, and the timeline has all sorts of issues. On March 8th, after an internal investigation, the IDF released a timeline suggesting that the aid convoy began to cross into northern Gaza accompanied by its tanks at 4:29 a.m. A minute later, at 4:30 a.m., the IDF said its troops fired warning shots toward the east to disperse crowds before firing at suspects who they claimed posed a threat. At 4:45 a.m., the military said it fired more warning shots. Okay, there's you're gonna watch the video for yourselves. You're gonna see the time that the shootings take place. What warning shots? Let's watch.
The gunfire started earlier than the IDF claimed. The IDF published this timeline saying the trucks arrived at the checkpoint at 4 a.m. They then crossed at 4:29, and only after that did the IDF fire shots at the crowd.
Yeah.
But in Bilal's video, filmed 7 minutes earlier at 4:22 a.m., gunshots ring out. He warns there is a tank. The IDF claimed the convoy was still stationary at the checkpoint at this time. Next, Jihad begins filming. It's now 4:28 a.m. and there's a barrage of gunfire and the shots are close. Analysis by weapons experts of the bursts indicate it is heavy automatic gunfire at 600 rounds per minute. Jihad keeps filming. A tank is beside me. We're now under siege, he says. Moments later, you see a truck driving along the road. We spotted traces from the gunfire here. One can be seen ricocheting up here, according to weapons experts.
So there's a mountain of evidence regarding how the IDF is carrying out this war in a way that has complete disregard for human lives, for civilian lives. It doesn't matter that there's a mountain of evidence. In America, we don't like to think of things in a nuanced way. Everything is black and white. So either you fully support everything Israel does and you're not allowed to criticize the military operations they're carrying out, or you're supportive of Hamas. That's the binary that's been presented to the American people, and you must pick a side. Except no, we're not gonna pick a side in that weird, ridiculous, extreme binary, okay? Israel had the right to defend itself by going after Hamas. Israel lost the moral high ground when it became abundantly clear that everyone in the Gaza Strip, regardless of their age, regardless of their sex, regardless of whether or not they're actually a Hamas militant, every single person is a target. Every single person can get killed, and then they justify the killings of those innocent people, right? I don't subscribe to that. I don't defend that. And criticizing that doesn't mean that you disagree with Israel's right to exist, or you agree with Hamas and you believe that they're freedom fighters. Why are Americans unable to see what's happening clearly and make clear distinctions between right and wrong? Why is that so difficult?
Well, look, I think I know the answer. And it's because everyone in power, including the media in the past, would gaslight you. And they would tell you, no, of course Palestinians don't have a right to defend themselves. If they do, they're no good, dirty, terrorist Muslims. You know how they are. And if Israel kills 30 times the number of people Hamas did, as they have here, they say, no, Israel's an angel. And they had every right to kill 30,000, 800,000, it doesn't matter. Israel is right by definition, and all Muslims, and especially Hamas, are terrorists by definition. So shut up, and they wouldn't say shut up. And people would believe it, they would believe it. I swear to God, if you're young, you can't believe that people would believe that. But almost everyone in America believed that. So now, what's different? The media is doing a much better job. Are they doing a perfect job? No way. We've shown you the massive Israeli bias that still exists, including CNN having to run every story by their Jerusalem bureau. But having said that, CNN, New York Times, Washington Post have done terrific stories showing that the IDF is definitely lying, let alone brilliant reporting from Channel 4 in the UK, The Guardian, etc. So now the press is finally showing the American people in the West what's actually happening in Israel. And now people are horrified by it. They're like, oh, wait, oh, right, there's been an occupation for 75 years. These people have been told, you are not human enough to rule yourselves. You will be ruled by the Israelis, and you are to never fight back, never. And if you do, you're a terrorist, okay? But that's okay, fine. You kill civilians, I think you are a terrorist. But when Israel kills civilians, and they shoot at starving people trying to get food for their family,
it's called self-defense.
Self-defense. And oh, they were, Hamas was hiding behind those human shields. All this total, utter propaganda. And in the past, I would say it's propaganda, and people are like, anti-Semite, how dare you question Israel? Everyone knows that you can criticize every government in the world except Israel, right? And people in America, if you don't live in America, they totally believe that. They thought that like good guys never question Israel. You always say they're right no matter what. Now, do you wanna know what drives that? Biden's number one donor is AIPAC, $11.2 million. If you think he's not affected by the $11.2 million, you're totally insane. You should be checked into an asylum or go get a job in Washington as a reporter, because they think that it's not at all relevant. They never mention it in a single story. Who's the number one donor for the leader of the Republicans in the House, Speaker Johnson? AIPAC, huh? Number one for Ted Cruz, AIPAC. And I can go on and on and on and on. So all of these legalized bribes, but every reporter in the country says it doesn't affect the politicians, even 1%. So we will never mention it in any of the stories. Okay, but we live in the reality-based world. Obviously, AIPAC is campaign contributions, sets American foreign policy, period. And Biden says, I cannot believe Israel is killing all these people. I have wagged my finger many times. Send him 14 billion more. Send him 14 billion more. Don't worry, Joe Biden, the check cleared.
When we come back from the break, Trump has some pretty awful perspectives and thoughts on the ongoing war in Gaza, and feels that if you happen to be a Jewish American who didn't vote for him and doesn't plan to vote for him, well, are you really a good Jewish person?
Yeah, he's good to tell.
Yeah. Anyway, that and more coming up. Don't miss it.
Back on TOT, Cenk, Anna, Lisa Marie Bontempi, Chris Kidd, Lucas Dykes. They all just hit the join button below the video on YouTube. Yuzora, Sora, Drink Your OJ, Tanya Dodgers all gifted a membership. Stanley Smith gifted 2, Lady F and T gifted 5, and Ramiro Tempest, the Slime Dragon, gifted 16. You guys are wonderful. We appreciate you so much, Anna.
Donald Trump is continuing this trend of talking down Jewish Americans because they don't support him enough. Insane. So let's hear what he has to say and we'll break it down.
They don't want to talk about the attack of October 7th on Israel because Biden is no fan of Israel. Any Jewish person that votes for Biden does not love Israel, and frankly, it should be spoken to.
Joe Biden is currently in the middle of pursuing political suicide due to his unwavering commitment to Israel. Okay, even though his base overwhelmingly wants a ceasefire in Gaza and wants Biden to leverage the aid that he's providing to Israel, Biden's not listening to them and it's hurting him in the polls. But he's not a friend of Israel. I would venture to say that Biden is more a friend to Israel than to his own base of voters. But according to Donald Trump, not a friend of Israel, Trump believes he'd be a greater friend to Israel. Okay, so what is he gonna send $50 billion to Israel for their war on Gaza?
Well, Anna, to be fair, this is a perfect example of America first policy, where you say, I mean, obviously Israel's first, and America may be second, but it depends on who else is giving money to Donald Trump. No, definitely Saudi Arabia second, Russia third. America's gonna be top 10 for sure. As soon as Donald Trump and his family stop taking bribes from all those other countries. I mean, the Saudis gave Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, $2 billion for a private equity fund. I bet that helped the family, okay? So America third at best, okay? So guys, for all the MAGA guys who are like, oh no, Trump's anti-war. He's saying Biden is not helping the Israelis do more war. And that we should send them more money. Your taxpayer money, you worked super hard for. He's saying they did not kill enough Palestinians. They did not commit enough war crimes. I want them to do more. I'm pro-war more than Biden. And so elect me and I will serve Israel to the best of my abilities. Well, you guys must be so proud.
So this conversation went down on the Wayne Root on Real America's Voice show. And so Trump's on there, he's talking about the ongoing war in Gaza. And he also, of course, was hyper focused on using it as an opportunity to hit at Democrats and Joe Biden specifically. He claims that, you know, Biden isn't completely on Israel's side, it's a shame. And again, that's despite the fact that Biden has been sending more and more military weaponry and funding to Israel, even going around Congress to do so. So let's hear more of what Trump has to say.
How a Jewish person can vote for Biden is, or a Democrat, because they are on the side 100% of the Palestinians, and he doesn't know how to get out of it. He's stuck. But he is, if you look at what he's done, he is totally on the side of the Palestinians. And frankly, It's incredible that historically Jewish people vote for Democrats. To me, I cannot, and I know you're Jewish, Wayne, and I know you vote for me, but I don't understand it, and you probably don't understand it either. I've been more pro-Israel than any other president by far. You know, it's just an amazing thing. Maybe it's just a bad habit when you vote for a Democrat, but I don't know how anybody that's Jewish can vote for a Democrat.
Is there maybe a possibility that Jewish Americans prioritize other domestic policies over Israel? There is a possibility that that's the case.
Yeah.
Okay, so like the idea that the only thing that Jewish American voters are fueled by is Israel is ridiculous. But you know, according to Trump, if you're a Jewish American who supports Biden, who by the way continues to send 2,000-pound bombs to Israel, well then are you really a good Jewish person, right? Are you really someone who loves Israel? It looks like you're a traitor to your identity, according to Donald Trump. You must vote for him because he would do more for Israel.
So look, I've been saying for a long time now that Joe Biden's gonna lose this election. He's losing the swing states, yada yada, right? But my only caveat was, unless Donald Trump finds a way to, you know, defeat himself. And he's really good at that. He's such a natural born loser. He always finds a different way to punch himself in the face. And this is a prime example of it. So he's got Biden on the ropes. He's now has a, in the last poll, Trump has a 2-point lead with younger voters, which
that's
is
insane.
Shocking.
Yep.
Unbelievable. It's like, if you don't know American politics, younger voters have been voting for Democrats in large numbers, overwhelming numbers for a long time now. Okay, so and Biden last time had over a 20-point lead with younger voters, and it helped decide the election in his favor. So here comes Trump to rescue defeat from the jaws of victory. So what do young voters care about the most, according to the polling? And bless their hearts for being wonderful, decent, caring people. Not student debt relief, not any of the things that you would imagine. They care about Gaza the most. Okay, and that is why Biden has lost their support.
Can I jump?
So here comes Trump. One second, Anna. Here comes Trump. He's like, "Hey, younger voters, remember, don't vote for me. I'm much worse on Israel than Joe Biden is. I don't care about any innocent Palestinian lives. I don't think Israel's been killing enough. So, young voters, make sure you go to Biden, even though he's financed this genocide. I swear to you guys, I'm going to be worse." Okay, well now what are we gonna do?
So when we think of young voters, we typically think of individuals who lean more liberal, have more progressive political values. And so that's why it's so shocking that you see some of the more recent polls showing that Trump has actually increased his support among young voters. But let's just forget about that group, that demographic specifically, and just focus on Trump's base. I was very curious to see how Trump was gonna handle Gaza, because the America First crowd, to their credit, are genuine about America First. They don't wanna send more foreign aid to all sorts of countries, but they're not on board with sending more military aid and more resources to Israel. And here you have Donald Trump on a conservative radio show, which by the way, Wayne Root is, he used to be Jewish, he's now evangelical. And he's even more, you know, zealous when it comes to his pro-Israel stance. You can guess, I mean, it's shocking to me that he is, that he switched over to evangelical. Now he's more, you know.
That's not shocking. Evangelical Christians are way more, way bigger zealots when it comes to Israel than Jewish Americans.
I know, and the reason why is what grosses me out, considering he was Jewish. So he, anyway, let's get off that topic. But what does he do? Like, I thought Trump might actually, because look, you can hate him all you want, and I don't agree with Trump's policies. We've been very critical of Trump. But one thing I've given him credit for is the fact that he seems to have good political instincts, right? He seems to play to his base, whereas, you know, with the Democratic Party, it's a freaking struggle to get Democratic candidates and Democratic presidential candidates to listen to the base. With Trump, that's not been the case. But in this particular issue, Trump's having difficulty, because on one hand, you have the Adelsons, you've got that sweet, sweet campaign cash. But then on the other hand, you know, you've got the America First MAGA crowd. Which one do you choose? He needs the money, he's had some difficulty fundraising, but he also needs to play to his base. And this interview made it clear which strategy he's gonna take. He's gonna go straight for the pro-Israel stance because he needs that campaign cash.
Okay, So guys, you can check it out for yourself. If you're MAGA, you don't believe us, that's okay. Look it up online. And so Sheldon Adelson gave Trump $100 million in 2016, and then again, another $100 million in 2020. And that's why he moved the embassy. That's why he did everything that Israel asked for. So if you're like a right-wing zealot, and some of them still exist, right-wing zealots that are for Israel. So because they're evangelical Christians and hope that everybody in Israel dies, Jews, Muslims, everybody, when Jesus comes back after they start Armageddon and all that nonsense. Okay, you're gonna stay in Trump's side and you're gonna be Republican supporter of Israel, no problem. I understand it. I think it's monstrous. I think you guys are the worst people on earth, but at least I get your motivations, right? But if you're anti-war MAGA, there's no question Trump is choosing Miriam Adelson, who's the widow of Sheldon Adelson, over you. He's saying, I would rather try to get another $100 million in legalized bribes from her because it's all about me, 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 me. And you thought I was anti-war? No, I'm more pro-war than Joe Biden. I don't think there's been enough war here in the Middle East. By the way, remember, he moved the embassy, which could have started another war. He killed the top Iranian general, which could have started another war. So he got out of the Iranian deal, which was a peace deal. He's been agitating and agitating for more war. And now he says, I swear if I'm elected, I will serve Israel obediently. Okay, and my donors basically in this case. So MAGA, what is it? No, he's wrong on this and you know it. So that's them. You could lie to yourself if you want and come up with excuses. But at the end of the day, I think Anna's right. What I'm seeing in social media is a lot of America First MAGA guys going, this isn't what I signed up for. This is weird. Why is he doing this? I got news for you. It's very obvious. He's doing it for the same reason every politician does it, corruption. Okay, last thing. Because not only is this an ad to repel younger voters, to hurt his own base, but it is, of course, as Anna mentioned, also a classic anti-Semitic trope to say that Jews don't care about America, even if they're American citizens. They care about Israel first and then their loyalty to Israel first. It's so ironic because Trump is swearing my loyalty is to Israel first while pretending Jewish Americans are saying it, right? Well, they never said that. 70% of Jewish Americans voted for Joe Biden. So what he just did was he spit in the face of 70% of Jews in this country saying, you guys aren't real Jews. You think that's a good political strategy? No, that's a terrible political strategy. So 3 for 3 on how this was awful politics and awful policy. So there you go. Joe Biden gets back in the race by Donald Trump punching himself in the face 200 times. Because that's what losers do. And that's what he's in the middle of doing right now.
All right, before we go to our break and the second hour, I wanted to talk a little bit about how Biden is performing in the polls among young people. And it's not looking good for Biden. Look, things can change because Trump obviously stepped in it when it came to the war on Gaza. But for now, the polling is not looking good for Biden when it comes to young voters. So without further ado, let's get into the details.
Joe Biden is struggling with young voters. He's struggling with minority voters. And so these are the kind of voters that they want to say, hey guys, we're going to help you.
Among the oldest group of voters, 65 plus, there's a majority who approve of how Biden is handling this. That's plus 12. Look at the youngest group of voters. 20 approve, 70% disapprove. He is 50 points underwater with the youngest group of voters. That is a 62-point net swing between youngest and oldest on this topic of Israel and Hamas.
Not good news for Joe Biden when you consider that the Democratic Party historically was able to draw much more support among young voters. And now it appears that young voters are considering other options. And there is a fascinating political realignment that's revealing itself in this general election polling, with young voters seemingly flocking to the Republican Party or more likely a third party option. So here's what the polls are saying. A new NPR PBS NewsHour Marist College National poll showed Trump 2 points ahead ahead of Biden among millennial and Gen Z voters, while Biden led overall among voters 45 years and older, including those in the silent and greatest generations. Which generation decided to call them? Like, what age group is the greatest generation, and why didn't we get that title?
No, I think I am. So, what are you going to do now? Greatest generation. Anyway, back to this. Look, I just one quick thing here before Annie gives you more of the super interesting numbers. I mean, it's really historic what the change that's happened here. But the reason you're seeing such a big disparity on Israel itself, that one issue that they just showed you there on TV, is because older folks on average watch television, and younger folks on average do not watch television. Television is a propaganda factory. So they teach you this is the establishment point of view, and it is objective, okay? So it's like pro-Israel, pro-Israel, pro-Israel. So the older generations, all they've ever heard for the last 40, 50 years is how Israel is the greatest country that's ever been formed, and the Palestinians are all terrorists. So you go online, you find out reality, and that flips it to 70-20, right? And reality shows you that's not what's happening at all. And for those older voters that are hooked on MSNBC and CNN, etc., it's very hard to get them to turn around because they've had 50 years of brainwashing about how Israel must be right by definition and the Palestinians are always wrong and always the terrorists. So that's why you're seeing those giant disparities.
Now, there are other polls that showed similar trends, although not as pronounced. A Fox News poll last month showed Trump leading Biden among voters under 30 by a whopping 18 points in a head-to-head matchup. So here's an example of a poll. This one's a bit of an outlier, to be quite frank, which shows a much larger lead that Trump has managed to secure among younger voters. But, you know, again, you really want to take an average of polling to see where the reality lies. I wouldn't just rely on one poll. But you're seeing a trend in more polls coming out recently where young people are kind of starting to look at other options because they're not happy with Biden. But not every poll has Trump leading Biden among young voters. They all do seem to reveal a similar trend, though. Wall Street Journal's national and swing state polling shows Biden 10 points ahead of Trump at 50% with voters under the age of 30. But that's actually a significant decrease when you compare those numbers to polling from 2020 or from the exit polls from 2020. Also, let's take a look at this graph. It's kind of incredible. Exit polls from 2020 actually show that Biden secured 62% of voters under the age of 30. Right? And so that trend is now starting to reverse. Older voters really do seem to favor Biden more this time around. For instance, a Quinnipiac University poll released last week had Biden 20 points ahead of Trump among voters under the age of 35. But that survey also had Biden ahead by 8 points among voters 65 and older, which would be a significant reversal from recent elections when Republicans won older voters. And look, one other thing that I should note is it really depends on who turns out to vote, right? Because historically speaking, older voters are much more motivated to show up and vote. They just are. And younger voters oftentimes talk a big talk, but then they don't vote. And so this might actually not be that big of a deal for Biden if young people sit this out. But if young people are galvanized and they really wanna voice their displeasure with Biden and they show up and vote against him, well, then it's bad news for Biden, but it really relies on how many young voters decide, no, I want to cast a ballot, I want to vote in the general election.
Yes, so here again, TV versus online matters. So, but there's something fascinating going on with the older voters, which I'll come back to in a second. But you see this gigantic shift of about 30 points in favor of Biden for younger voters to now -2. On average, I think that's the most accurate number out of the polls that we showed you guys, right? So is it just Gaza? No. It's also because on TV, what they implicitly tell you is that the status quo is great. So when a Democratic president like Barack Obama or Joe Biden passes a bill or maybe two bills that help you a little bit, sometimes a lot, Obamacare helped a lot of millions of people. It left a lot of us completely unaddressed, but at least those people got help. Joe Biden did student debt relief for about 10% of the people who have student debt. Okay, so you got 10% better than the status quo. So the Bill Maher's and the Joe Scarboroughs and the Rachel Maddow see that and go, what a giant win. We were already multimillionaires on top of the world and we got a little bit better. Joe Biden's an American hero, right? But for younger voters, they're not watching TV and getting this brainwashing about how great the status quo is. They're actually living their lives. And their lives are very tough these days. Wages are on average way lower than they used to be. Housing prices are way higher, food prices are higher. Student debt is absolutely crushing them. And corporate rule has put a stranglehold around all of us. So younger voters are not seeing this nirvana that TV is presenting to older voters. So they're going, I don't know why I owe anything to Joe Biden. I don't owe him anything. You show me results, I vote for you. I don't know why I would do anything different. The younger voters are acting rationally. On TV, they're asking you to act irrationally. The status quo is not great for a great majority of Americans, but they're telling you, shut up and vote for the guy who gave you the status quo. It's not gonna work with younger voters because they're not even watching. They can't get that through their heads. They think the whole world watches Joe Scarborough and Anderson Cooper. So if we just say these propaganda things more on those channels, we'll get younger voters. You won't, because they're not in the house, okay? So for the older voters.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in with that.
Look, yeah.
There has been virtually no policy discussion in this presidential election so far.
Yes.
And there's absolutely no conversation at the moment, I mean it could change, about whether there's going to be a debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. Now, some people, like, this is the thing. I get that most people in America at this point have made up their minds and you're gonna support your political tribe, but you're not interested in a debate because you've already made up your mind. But there are the people who haven't decided, right? The independent voters, that is a growing population of voters in America. Independent voters used to be considered the low information voters. That is completely flipped now. Independent voters, I believe, now know too much and they're just not happy with either party. And so when it comes down to the general election, they really don't know, they're uncertain and they want to hear both parties make their case. I don't know if they're gonna have a debate, and there's been no discussion about actual policy, right? There's been some implications here and some like very vague statements there, but neither one of the candidates have really rolled out any specific detailed policy that they would attempt to pursue should they get elected.
And I think that at some point the kids used to go like this.
Oh.
Okay, so yes, that's 100% right. So for older voters, again, all generalities, there's tons of older voters that watch us, that are online, etc. But on average, they watch TV. And on TV, they never talk about, but my whole life they've never talked about policy. Every once in a while something will flare up, Israel Gaza, Roe v. Wade, etc. And they'll go around the edges of policy, but they never tell you, hey, this party's for that and that, this party's for that and that candidate's for this, etc. They instead, they talk about how will it affect the horse race. Because God forbid, you should actually know what these folks stand for. And if one side says, hey, let's cut Social Security, and the other side says not to, they have to always equivocate and just round out the edges until you can't tell who's on which side anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when I was growing up, oh my God, you'd get both sides of them nonstop. You couldn't tell who was a Republican and who was a Democrat. And so people who grew up on that system, they've been trained over the years. Policy doesn't matter. Policy's invisible. It's not even discussed. So they would tell people to make decisions based on, for example, absurd things like who's more civil. And by the way, that one cuts against, Donald Trump cuts in favor of Joe Biden because Joe Biden's more civil. But is that a thing? If Biden's policies are worse, why do I care if he's civil or uncivil, right? But to people who watch and read mainstream media, they think, that's right, civil. That's why Joe Biden's so good. Civil doesn't prove anything. It's not a policy position. It's just a style. And it's a style that is better to maintain the status quo. And so the reason I think that older voters are not gravitating towards Biden is Donald Trump is not exactly in favor of the status quo. He's a change maker in a chaotic, crazy way. He's like a meteor that hits the planet. He changes what's going on. And so TV has been saying, change, she's changed. Remember, older voters, you don't want change. You want the status quo. They're not doing it to help Biden. That's what they've been doing for the last 50 years. But it is coincidentally helping Biden because they're so pro status quo and they've trained their viewers to be in favor of that. And clearly Biden is the bigger status quo candidate than Trump.
When we come back for the second hour of the show, we'll talk a little bit about Jared Kushner's foreign wheeling and dealing. It does appear that he may have sold his influence in the White House in order to secure these insane investment deals. So we've got that and more coming up. Don't miss it.